Welcome to episode 77 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts Tish and Dr. T. In this episode, we discuss the major upsets in round two of the NRL, the triumphant impact of Benji Marshall at the Tigers, the awful capitulation of the Eels, and the next immortal. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. Welcome to episode 77 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where our aim is to build an online rugby league community for everyone. Each week we bring you the everyday fans' perspective on the biggest news and issues in the world of rugby league and break it all down for you in our own unique way. I am your co-host, Dr. T, a very unhappy Dr. T today. But anyway, a very happy Tish. Joining me is your co-host, Tish. How are you going?
Oh, Dr. T, I am over the moon. You know, obviously my team, the West Tigers, pulling out some miracles. One of the big talking points of the season. So I'm feeling absolutely ecstatic at the moment. But you know what? I'm also thinking to myself, should I be celebrating so much? So early, like, is this just a mirage? You know, is their performance, is it still just a little, you know, maybe it's a little premature to start celebrating already, but look, I'm absolutely stoked. And you know what, I think what I'm really most happy about is the fact that we're sort of into the NRL 2018 season. Already some huge upsets, some massive scores, some crazy games, some really tight games. I think even a Golden Point game has already happened as well. Lots of penalties. I think we've almost done lots of sin bins as well. I think we've had more sin bins the last two rounds than what we had all last year, sort of thing. So absolutely fantastic, and it's just great to be talking about rugby league again. But Dr. T, how are you doing? How are you feeling after, you know, shall we call it Black Sunday?
Well, I don't know what to call it. Let's call it not Golden Point Sunday, because it was a less than golden 54 points to nil, which, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, you've got to say. To lose to a team, 54 points is bad enough, you know, to let in 54 points, sorry, but to actually not even score a point in return is, there's something rotten in the state of Denmark or Dundas or whatever, you know, whatever the modern version of that Shakespearean thing is. There's something really wrong with the Eels. I got to say, I didn't expect this at all.
I don't think anybody did really. Let's be honest. Like, it came out of nowhere, didn't it? I mean, weren't they the favourites going into the game? I'm pretty sure they were.
Well, look at that. I've still got them. You know, look, I'm still not going to go back on my tip that they're going to win this year. Wow. But geez, I can't. I mean, it's only round two.
Yeah.
Look, we'll talk about more of that in a minute. But let's recap round two results first of all before we get stuck into our six tackles. So we saw the Dragons defeat the Sharks in a close one, 20-16. Traditional rivals there, the local derby in the Sutherland Shire and Illawarra Shire of Sydney. Broncos and another local derby defeated the Cowboys 24-20 with a starring performance from the goalpost, who denied the Cowboys a try right at the end. The memes are unbelievable this year. We're only in round two, and we've got some of the best memes you will ever see just with a few games. So that was a corker, that one. Roosters smashed the Bulldogs 30-12. So the hapless Bulldogs this year, unfortunately, are going to fight their way a little bit uphill. The Warriors are continuing their winning form against the Titans 20-8. The Panthers in a close one against the Rabbitohs 18-14. The Tigers in an even closer one, 10-8. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but to do that against the run of penalties against them, 18 penalties that the Storm received from the referees. And, you know, I think that's the biggest it's the most number of penalties received in an NRL game by a team, by a single team. And despite all that, the Tigers were still able to defeat the Storm. So that's unbelievable there.
And let's not forget the sin bin as well. One of our players was sin bin for 10 minutes as well.
That's right. And in fact, the only points that were scored, I think, was during that sin bin. So, you know, that says something. The Sea Eagles and the Eels, well, you know, if I had my way, I would sin bin the whole Eels side. Because 54 points to nil, as we just said, an absolutely disgraceful performance. Inexplicable. I cannot explain what happened. The Knights against the Raiders, 30-28. The Raiders looked like they were winning this one and let the jaws of victory slip from their grasp or whatever it is. They lost that one more than the Knights won that one, I think. But and we'll talk about that soon. So that is the roundup of the round two results. So without any further ado, let's get stuck into the six tackles. So here we go with the six tackles. And number one, Benji Magic. So we talked about this last week, but Benji's return to the Tigers has resulted again in a shock win. So in the first two rounds, wins against the premiership favourites, the Roosters, and now the premiership holders, the Storm, in those first two rounds. Tish, how much of the Tigers' success is due to the return of Benji?
Well, I think a very big part has to do with the return of Benji Marshall. He's been playing well above what he's played in the last few seasons as well, and it's been an absolute joy to watch them play. It's a different Benji. It's a matured Benji. It's a game management Benji. It's not the razzle-dazzle Benji of the past, is it? It's more, you know, it's like, you know, I think Benji is what Batman fans were looking for with Ben Affleck. You know, they were looking for a more refined version of Batman, and unfortunately they didn't really get it with the new series of DC movies, but I feel like, you know, the Tigers are definitely getting that with Benji Marshall and his return back to the Tigers. And also, look, it's great to see the way the Tigers are playing. You know, they're sort of, you know, defense, they're leading with defense, not leading with attack like they've traditionally done. And they're all sort of scrambling very hard for each other. They're playing for each other. It seems to be a very good unit of guys. The only thing that kind of concerns me is the number of penalties, which I think is actually one of their strategies in terms of defense. But yeah, that kind of aligns me a little bit. And also, I think the style they're playing, I don't know how many weeks you can do it without getting completely exhausted doing all that defense. So, you know, they might need to change it up a little bit when they get further into the season. But I think it's the right type of game to play up against the big teams. Let's not forget, you know, last year Melbourne were the minor premiers and the premiers, and the Sydney Roosters came in second in the regular season. And obviously you said that they're the favourites. And now this week they've got to play Brisbane, who finished third last year. And the Tigers are the only team with a draw that, you know, basically is forcing them to play both, to play the top four teams twice this year. No other club has to do that. So that's really a big challenge. They've got a big challenge this year, but they're meeting it. And, yeah, it's great to see Benji doing well. I don't know if you've seen much. You know, there's a couple of things that I just realised about Benji Marshall. You know, he's younger than Jonathan Thurston. He's younger than Cooper Cronk. He's younger than Billy Slater. But yet everybody, you know, everybody has thought for over the last few years that he's too old. But yet, you know, he's showing that actually he's got a lot more to give. And, you know, maybe this is the start of a renaissance, the Benaissance. Wait, is that borrowing it for somewhere?
Wasn't that the Wayne Bennett Renaissance?
The Wayne Bennett, yeah.
Yeah. Look, it's interesting that you mentioned that he's kind of gone back to a different kind of style, and I thought maybe I'd want to ask you a bit more about that, given that you're kind of closer to the team and you understand the team a lot more than I guess I do and a lot of others would out there. But what are your thoughts on, like, what what is it? Why? I mean, because he wasn't really like that in. He kind of played a bit of that role at the Broncos last year, but what's the deal? What has changed with him? Is it because, like, even up until a couple of years ago when he was with the Dragons, there was still a bit of that frustration.
Mm.
You know, I remember several times towards the end of the year, you know, the Dragons were in the hunt for a top eight spot, and he. You know, he kind of, you know, he'd do his usual brain snaps of throwing passes over the sideline and you know, that kind of thing. So something happened last year. Was it the Wayne Bennett factor? I mean, is it that being under Wayne Bennett sort of matured him a little bit more than he would have otherwise? I can't pinpoint it. The only thing I can think of is that, you know, what you're seeing now is the fruits of the labor that Wayne Bennett put in to try and get Benji to sort of play a different style. Is that what your thought is on that?
Well, look, I've actually just seen an interview with Benji Marshall and you know, he's been asked that question straight up. You know, what is it about, you know, what's happened that you've sort of, you know, that you found all this form all of a sudden? And, you know, he mentioned a story that that last year, this time last year, he was not playing for the Broncos, but he was playing in the Queensland Cup. And when he went to play in the Queensland Cup, that was the first time he was ever playing reserve grade. And playing reserve grade, he started to train with a bunch of guys who were playing for the love of the game, playing, not getting paid to play. He was playing with amateurs. And it made him realize how much he actually loves rugby league and how much the game means to him. I mean, I'm paraphrasing what he's saying, but this is what he's talking about.
Yeah.
But he's talking about how he kind of lost that. And then he admitted that, you know, his last few seasons at the Tigers, his seasons at the Dragons, and even when going out to Brisbane, he never really appreciated what he had. And he kind of, you know, had a really bad attitude and kind of just admitted that. And then so I think, and you got to remember, he actually called Ivan Cleary asking to be part of the team. So I think what Benji's looking for is something called redemption. And I think that's that motivation that's driving him. He was not supposed to be in the lineup last week. You know, he was supposed to come off the bench. But yet, you know, fortunately for him and fortunately for the Tigers, you know, an injury has allowed him to play sort of, you know, the full 80 minutes in both games. But he's after redemption, and I think that's what's really awakened Benji, and it's kind of exciting, isn't it? Like, you know, he seems to be a lot more motivated now than what he's ever been before, and I think he's a lot more appreciative of, you know, his spot in the team and his role as a rugby league player. You know, it's not just Benji Marshall playing for the West Tigers. The other good thing is, I don't know if you caught the footy show a little bit. You know, they had Andrew Johns and Benji Marshall together, you know, sort of breaking down the attack of St. George against Cronulla. And you realize that, you know, like, you know, the Tigers are so fortunate. We've got a real good, clever player, you know, playing for us at the moment. It's like we've got an analyst of the game, you know, who's still playing for us. You know what I mean? Like, that's remarkable. And, you know, the other thing I've got to say is that, like, you know, the last few years we've been praising Jonathan Thurston, we're praising Cameron Smith and all these great players and everything, and I think Benji's been sort of left to the side. But really, he's part of this generation too, and he's been a great player in this generation. He's never been able to play Origin because he's represented his country. But, you know, he was the halfback for New Zealand that led him to their famous World Cup victory. And I think that he kind of feels like he needs to... you know, it's kind of like he's writing his legacy still, and I think he wants to write a better legacy than what he's currently got. And I know we're going to be talking about players and immortals down the track, but look, you know, it's a great start of season. It's only two games, right? There's still 24 to go, so, you know, he still has a long way to go to prove himself, and so do the Tigers. But you know, you couldn't ask for a better start, I think. Well, a fit Josh Reynolds would also be great, but other than that, you can't ask for a better start, I think, with the West Tigers.
Yeah, that's right. And I was going to say, as a final sort of question to you, you know, I mean, obviously it's more than just Benji returning. Ivan Cleary has done very well to focus on the defense, which is something that the Tigers have really lacked over the last few years, especially with the young side who doesn't really understand the importance of defense.
Yeah.
And I think that's changing. But what do you do? Josh Reynolds comes back. What do you do if you're Ivan Cleary? Do you let him wait it out a bit more on the bench? Do you use him off the bench? Do you put Benji on the bench? Do you meddle with a winning formula?
Well, if I was Ivan Cleary, firstly, I would try and get a role in Hollywood because he's quite a handsome coach. but from a team point of view, I would... I think you'd... I don't think you should play Luke Brooks at hooker. I know people have been talking about that. But I think what you could do is bring Reynolds off the bench. He was actually going to go into the dummy half role. Let him play that a little bit. And I think the three of them... you know, that's the thing. Like, I would almost leave it up to the three of them to decide how they want to do it. And if they're all in form and good enough, then they themselves should be able to work out what's better for the team. Like, I think that's the kind of maturity Ivan Cleary is kind of expecting from his senior players. And I think that that's kind of the direction that he's going to go for. But, it makes it interesting. It'd be interesting to see how, you know, when the Tigers eventually do lose, what actually ends up happening to them. How do they come back from that? So, anyway, lots of questions still to be answered, yeah, no doubt.
That's right. And this is more of a statement than a question, but if you're looking for someone to play Ivan Cleary, Casey Affleck.
Okay, yes.
I'm just thinking, I'm picturing Casey Affleck. I'm thinking maybe he can do it. But anyway, that's just my two cents. All right, number two. Awful Eels. The Eels fell to a record-breaking defeat against Manly, 54-0. No one expected it, least of all yours truly. What happened? Who is to blame? How do the Eels get back on track? I know you're going to ask me those questions, Tish, but I wanted your thoughts first.
Okay.
What do you think happened as an impartial observer?
Okay. What happened, and I'm going to go back to the wisdom of West Tigers coach Ivan Cleary, is that the Eels have had two back-to-back games in the heat on a Sunday afternoon, which I think has been quite sapping and draining. And in the off-season, they showed really good form in the trials, but their trials were both at night under much cooler conditions. So maybe they weren't ready for the conditions. That's probably one contributing factor. I think another contributing factor is the fact that, Manly were red hot. Let's not take away anything from Manly. They were red hot, and they were coming up against a good team that were playing at home, that were motivated to win, and you definitely have to bring your attitude up, you know? Another thing that happened in the game is that before the game, they had a 38 to 40-minute warm-up in the heat, right? A very excessive warm-up, particularly if you're going to play a game in the heat, 38-degree temperature, almost 40 degrees out there, and yet you're training for almost an hour before you even get onto the park. So there's a lot of preparation, things that I didn't think went right. But I think ultimately it comes down to this, their attitude. I don't think they wanted to be there. They certainly didn't want to play. They didn't want to people talked about them not being in the contest from a player point of view. And I think they were right. Like, I think that the one thing that Brad Arthur has to work on and change is the attitude of the players, because they definitely have the talent. They definitely have the skill. They could beat any team. They're probably one of the strongest rosters out there. They need to just fix their attitude a little bit and realize nothing's going to be handed to them in 2018. And that they need to just, and I think that's what Brad Arthur needs to focus on, and that's how they'll get back on track. How about your thoughts there, Dr. T? How do you fix the Eels?
Well, I think we just spoke about a gentleman who may have the answer, Benji Marshall. Maybe he needs to go down there and talk to them about what it was like when he got dropped. And maybe some of the Eels need to be dropped by some of the big names who did not contribute.
Yeah.
These are very, very well paid athletes.
Let's not pay him for a week, see how they go.
well, Let's pay them in the kind of effort that they gave, which is peanuts, you know, and let's see what happens. But Brad Arthur really needs to look. It's a difficult situation. There are some players that are on borrowed time as it is. There's been a lot on the internet about Timmy Manor and whether he's really captaincy material. He doesn't have the go forward that he used to, and that's a real problem. I don't think, you know, it's too late now. They've already announced the sort of the lineups, but I don't think it's a smart move to drop Timmy Manor for the game against the Sharks, which is where they play for the Johnny Manor Cup, which it would be quite awkward for his brother to be dropped. But having said that, I think he needs to be spoken to about his effort as well, his ability to lead the forwards and to get them moving. Some other high-profile names, Kane Evans and players like that, didn't really seem to provide the go-forward that was required. You know, there's questions about the backs. You know, should Hayne be in the centres or at fullback? Is Bevan French the answer at fullback? He seems to be a bit of a turnstile there. So there's a lot that Brad Arthur has to think about. They do have a strong roster, but let's be honest. Last year they also had Semi Redradra, who papered over the cracks a little bit with his amazing performances. So you take him out of that squad and you put in players who are, you know, and then you throw in that bad attitude, and this is what you get. You get 54-0. Early in the season, it's the loss that they had to have. I'm hoping that this allows them enough time to turn it around and be probably the first team in history to come back from a greater than 50-point defeat during the regular season to win a premiership. I think the record is I don't know who the record is, but I saw it recently. There was a team that got beaten by, I think, 42 something. I think it was the Panthers in 2003, and ended up winning during the regular season, got beaten by 42 points or something, and during the regular season ended up winning the premiership. So it is possible to get flogged. But the minutes a team gets flogged by this much, you immediately get those particular threads on online forums. No team has ever come back from a 50-point defeat to win a premiership, and a lot of people are writing off the Eels. And you know what? I think that is what will motivate some of them.
Yeah. I think they need a bit of a siege mentality, right? Us against
absolutely.
Them.
Sort of absolutely. Mentality. And that's what got them to the, you know, the momentum that got them to the finals last year. Unfortunately, it, you know, if you remember, in difficult and controversial circumstances, we were defeated. But you know, they certainly gave an effort there, and also when Hayne was in his magical best in 2009, that same kind of mentality, that momentum at the end of the season, they're able to put it together. Probably not as good as the Bulldogs have that siege mentality, but definitely the Eels respond well to that kind of camaraderie within the team, and that's what they need. So, look, if I was Brad Arthur, I would drop half of the squad immediately to reserve grade just to teach them a lesson.
Wow.
Just to teach, I mean, this is 54-0 is the kind of, if he's not careful, you know, our crystal ball, we were talking about coaches that would be in the firing line. No way in the world would I have considered Brad Arthur to be in contention to be sacked. But if he doesn't do anything now and they get defeated again, questions will be asked, you know, why? What's he doing to motivate them?
Okay. So, all right, we'll think about all of this, Doctor. If they dropped, I mean, like, I know they've already announced a team sort of thing, but just say, for instance, he dropped half the squad this round, they'll probably lose another game. Wouldn't they just add more pressure to the situation? Like, don't you think he's kind of sort of, I don't think he could do that at the moment, considering they haven't won a game yet?
Well, you kind of have to respond, though. I mean, even if they lose that for the next game, think about what it's going to do to the players that are, you know, there are probably three or four, you know, players that are nipping at the heels of those who are already there, who wouldn't really lose much. In fact, you'd gain at least some
speed
and some ticker, as they call it. Get players like Will Smith in there and, you know...
Fresh Prince.
That's right. Jazzy Jeff, put him into hooker. But look, you need to have a real think about this. But look, it is always a risk to make wholesale changes. But, you know, are we going to do what the New South Wales Blues coaches have done over the years and go conservative and not make the changes that need to be made in order to be, are we playing to win or are we playing to avoid losing? When you're in a campaign that is a long premiership campaign and you're only at game two, you can afford to make these calls early on to teach them a lesson and to, you know, like, if you want to be fair, if you don't want to single out players, make it easy. This week, all the backs are sacked. Next week, all the forwards are sacked. Keep them on their toes, Brad.
Wow.
That's what I say. In all seriousness, you know, and then invite Benji in to give him a bit of a talking to about what it's like playing in the Queensland Cup. And, you know, and on that as well, I mean, I wonder if that kind of attitude, what that's doing to Robbie Farah at the Rabbitohs, because he's also in a similar predicament. So there you go. But I've got nothing else to say about the Eels. Let's move on to number three. The Knights win again. So the Knights are 2-2 and with a grudge match against his old team, the Roosters, this weekend. Mitchell Pearce is shaping up for the most anticipated game of the year so far. What has been the secret of their success and will that success continue? Tish, what do you reckon? Why are the Knights 2-2?
Well, I think, I feel like the Knights, they have freedom, like they get to Newcastle. They've got quite a lot of new players this year, senior players who come from great clubs, great well-run clubs, and I think what they're bringing to the club is actually rubbing off on some of the younger players that Newcastle were already developing and already had, and I think that's kind of a cocktail that's leading to their success. And I actually heard Nathan Brown talk a little bit about that, where, they see a guy like Mitchell Pearce, who's been playing, for the Roosters for so long. He's always apparently asking everybody in the team, what do they think about his game? How do you think he can improve? How can he not? So he's very open to improving himself. He's always the first one at training. All the senior players that have come from new clubs, you know, they've got a different standard when it comes to training and preparing and being professional, and I think that's rubbing off on some of the other Knights players who haven't been in that environment, and that's causing them to win. And I think that they've got a really close knit group. The other thing that Nathan Brown talked about, which was really interesting, I never actually really heard this take, is that what separates good teams from bad teams is that most of the players in a good team can play 7 or 8 out of 10 consistently week in, week out. Whereas a good team and a bad team can sort of play 10 out of 10 one week, but then only play like a 1 or 2 out of 10 the next week. And it's that consistency that sort of lets them down. And the thing about bringing in these senior players who come from clubs that have had consistent success is that it's kind of training the guys who are sort of not being too consistent. It's actually teaching them a bit of consistency. And I think that's what's leading to their success. But also, I don't know if they've played... I mean, Manly were red hot, so, you could sort of say that they had a tough competition against Manly. The other game was against Canberra, I believe, in Canberra, so it is a tough game. So, yeah, they've been doing really well. So, yeah, I really can't criticise even their opposition. What are your thoughts there, Dr. T?
Yeah, look, I think part of me thinks that we underestimated them in the last couple of years.
I think that's
years.
Probably true as well, yeah.
I think that for whatever reason, they underperformed. And now all they needed was a bit of a, sometimes when you're cooking something, Tish, and you just sort of think, it just needs a little bit of salt, just a pinch, and then a bit of something else. And that little pinch of salt is Mitchell Pearce. And then that little pinch of something else is Kalyn Ponga. And so, like, you get this kind of you get just a little bit of something that slightly alters the makeup of your team, and all of a sudden you've got, you know,
success.
You've got the makings of a MasterChef dish as opposed to a dud. So I think that's the difference between what's been happening, you know, the last couple of years and what's happening this year. It's just very, very minor changes to the squads, and the players that are there. They've been around, you know, for a year already, and it's just a continuation now. But yeah, I think Mitchell Pearce, I mean, look, I think I underestimated Mitchell Pearce as well. His impact, I didn't realize that he would have that much of an impact, but it helps to have someone who is a good first grader, has made it to Origin level, even though he hasn't been as successful as we would have liked. But he certainly brings a level of experience that they haven't really had at that stage before. Ironically, absolutely, with Hodgkinson, you know, departing, you know, Hodgkinson being the only Blues halfback in the last 10 years that has been in a winning series, and not Mitchell Pearce. So I can't work out the irony of that, you know, of that situation.
Playing reserve grade with the hooker that also was there, right? That
I think it's not too many changes. And then that just goes to show that some subtle changes are all that's required sometimes in order to make such a huge impact on the success of the squad. So,
more power to them. And a big contest against the Roosters. I think there's about four or five ex-Rooster players at the Knights, and I know that they're going to be up for a big game. And I think the Roosters are going to be up for a big game to sort of show the Knights guys, hey, we've moved on from you guys. We don't really need you guys. And I think the Roosters are going to... So I think it's going to be a great contest. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just go through. I just want a quick thing. Let's not forget that even though the squad in its entirety is not as strong as some of the others on paper, they do have some pretty handy players that have had quite a bit of experience. And I'm just going to point out just a couple in the squad that, you know, we've got Jamie Bure. Okay. We've got Aiden Guerra.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Hyington.
Yeah.
Sean Kenny-Dowell, Jacob Lilliman.
Yeah, wow.
You know, and this is before I get to Mitchell Pearce and Kalen Ponga as, I guess, two of the star players. So just on the basis of those four or five players that I named, you've got players that, you know, they've been there before and done that and could quite easily kind of mentor those around them, especially players like Kenny-Dowell, who is a gun player. And has always been for the Roosters and probably himself an underrated player as well. And let's not forget, you know, he's no longer a Rooster. He's now at the Knights and who knows what impact he's having on his fellow center pairing. So
Dr. T, do you think we should sell our houses and put all of our money into Newcastle winning the premiership this year?
Not when you've got Sean Kenny-Dowell and Mitchell Pearce, who are betting men themselves playing for the Knights. No, I don't think you should.
Okay, all right. Let's just making it clear out there.
Yeah, yeah. Terrible. We don't condone gambling of a ridiculous nature, such as putting $100 on the Eels at the beginning of the season. No, anyway. All right, let's move on to tackle number four. Harmony Day celebrations this week are marred by fans' racist taunts. Greg Inglis was subjected to racist taunts on the weekend from opposition fans. We're not going to explain exactly what happened, but needless to say, we've heard these kind of taunts before. And it's sad to say that people still kind of say these things unnecessarily. Mm. What should be done to address these underlying issues plaguing sports, not just rugby league, but other sports as well in Australia? Is a life ban appropriate? Should life bans be applied, to sledges perpetrated by players on the field? Or do we go with the what happens on the field stays on the field scenario, which a lot of people tend to revert towards? Tish, on the first point, what, you know, what should we do to address these underlying kind of issues with fans just being blurting out these silly things and racist taunts? What should be done with them?
Okay, well, look, firstly, we don't condone any sort of racism and any sort of offensive taunts to anybody about anything that's important to their life. And I think that that's something that really shouldn't be part of the player fraternity nor the fans of the game. So we don't condone that, obviously that sort of thing. It's kind of interesting as well. I just have to say it is interesting that you've got this situation where, you know, we're going to find, the Penrith Panthers, I guess, and we're going to find whoever it was that said these things, and they're going to get life bans, they're going to get multiple year bans, we're going to come down hard on them. And look, while I do agree with that principle, I also think about other situations in rugby league that are being talked about at the moment, where players' behaviour on and off the field are being questioned. And the rhetoric isn't anger and hatred like it is for these Penrith, paying customers to say, hey, you know, we need to life ban them. The rhetoric for when a player, does something that's illegal or does something that sort of holds the game is, oh, you know, this player, we feel so sorry for him. You know, he's gone through a lot. You know, he's trying to get his life back together. Let's support him. Let's get around him. Let's develop him. Let's rehabilitate them. Without really talking about the consequences of what their actions are. Whereas when a fan goes out of line, all of a sudden, life bans. That's it. No more rugby league for you ever again. And absolutely no sympathy. And I wonder if that's just the double standard that crept into rugby league and rugby league administration where, you know, the fans who, you know, probably, you know, that the people who probably said it, I mean, look, I don't know who they are or anything like that, but, you know, I could see people having a few too much to drink, maybe not really, you know, supporters of Greg Inglis or maybe frustrated South fans. I don't know who they were, but, you know, going over the line with a few words they say, but then on the flip side, you've got players who intentionally do things that are wrong, and we sort of react in a different way, and I find that just intriguing or fascinating how we do that as a sport sometimes. So, look, a life ban, I don't know. I feel that that's a bit too extreme. I think if anything, we should get more awareness out there and try to help these attitudes in society. We should try to get these views in society out of society, which is a process which will take probably, you know, decades to do, but I think we're a lot closer than what we were 10 years ago. So, yeah, that are my thoughts. What about your thoughts there, Dr. T?
Yeah, look, I have to agree with you. There is definitely a double standard, and in the sense that we tend to kind of jump down people's throats when it's a transgression that is of a particular type, and if it's a particularly sensitive one like racial taunting, we tend to sort of overemphasize the punishment over punish, shall I say, compared to other transgressions. So if you look at that, you know, when you look at it like that as a double standard, you look at the fact that, you know, We have a fan or multiple fans, not sure, who have said something to an opposition player, taunted him about his Aboriginality. Let's be fair, that's what happened. I don't know if it was a taunt so much as a flippant kind of reference to the color of his skin, potentially. Be that as it may, no doubt in the media, these people have been singled out. Photos have been shown of them, and calls for their life ban have come out. And you know, so should it be. If that's what it is, if that is considered appropriate, that you shouldn't say those things as a fan. I mean, think about if you think of it this way, these people are adults and they've got kids around them. You'll remember that a couple of years ago, there was an incident in the AFL where Adam Goods pointed out a teenage girl who made a similar racist taunt, pointed her out. She then got the media all over her, and it was a very difficult situation for her to get a young girl, you know, with the spotlight on her. However, there was a discussion, a debate about, you know, what did she learn her lesson, that, you know, that kind of thing. Maybe that kind of thing is good in a way, that it sort of highlights the fact that you shouldn't be speaking like that, you know, in front of kids, because then this is what happens. They will imitate you and they will say things without thinking, without realizing how hurtful it is, all that kind of stuff. Having said that, when you look at, if that is the measure that you are using to punish that kind of behavior, you have players running around who have been violent, who have been convicted of violent crimes, you know, and yet the rugby league fraternity has accepted them back into the playing fraternity. And here we are at this situation where we're having this debate about whether that should play a part in determining what kind of punishment, to be fair, idiot fans get for saying idiotic things that are of a racist nature, which we should stamp out. But should we not also stamp out violent crime in society? You know, like these are the legitimate questions that people are raising. And, you know, look, it is a tough situation. Having said that, I think you don't soften punishment in one area just to avoid the double standard in the other area. I think it's okay to be really strong on against racism, and I think that's fair enough. The NRL is sending a message. I think what would be prudent for them to do, this is I think where I'm going to finish my thoughts, is that the NRL recognizes that there is a double standard and that it needs to equally be strong against you know, have an equal kind of zero tolerance or low tolerance for players committing violent acts. And that goes for also fans who do violent things. I mean, you know, soccer deals with this, with the hooligans and the flares and the violence and all that kind of stuff. And rugby league is no stranger to that as well. So that's the thing. That's my message to the NRL, is that go hard against the racist taunts, fair enough, but also turn your eye to other kind of similar double standards that currently exist, and try to address those in the correct direction, which is, you know, equally harsh punishment, I think.
Yeah.
So that's that's my final thought on that.
Totally agree with you. I think at the moment the message you're sending out is racism is not okay, but, you know, we'll live with domestic violence, and it shouldn't be that way, right? It should be, we should be equally as tough, if not tougher, on some of these violent issues, and be tough on violence as well, on racism as well. So let's hope the NRL can stamp out that double standard as quick as possible.
That's right, and especially being Harmony Day this week, this Wednesday, you know, it's a message that the NRL should send very strongly as well. All right, tackle number 5. Who will be the next immortal? So the NRL has revealed this week that up to 2 immortals will be unveiled this year. There is a lot of support for Mal Meninga being the next immortal, at least from Queenslanders like Wally Lewis and Darren Lockyer. But what about Norm Proven? And, of course, another thing to note is that after the NRL bought the intellectual property rights from Rugby League Week magazine last year for the Immortals concept, they have decided to stretch the net to players all the way back to the game's foundation in 1908. So you remember that the rules were that it was post-war players that they were looking at as immortals, but now they're going to stretch it all the way back. So this actually opens the door for pioneers of the game like Dally Messenger and Dave Brown to be recognized. So, look, that's pretty tough. Tish, what do you think? You know, who do we think should be the next 2 immortals to be unveiled this year? Who is deserving?
Okay, well, since they've opened it up for the pre-war era, you know, so we're starting all the way back to 1908. I think it's only appropriate to have players of that era inducted in, because they've been misrepresented or not really quite represented at all in rugby league, and their contribution. We wouldn't have rugby league as strong as it is in 2018 if it wasn't for those people back in 1908 all the way up to, you know, modern day that have sacrificed. And I think, you know, we have the Dally Messenger, the Dally M's, named after Dally Messenger, but yet he himself is not an immortal. I think that's probably a bit of a travesty, and I think they need to rectify that wrong, and I certainly want to put Dally Messenger in there. And then the other point that I had, I mean, if they're going to induct two, I think they should also look at maybe potentially a non-Australian candidate, because I think the contribution to international players in the NRL in Australia has been quite strong. And, you've certainly seen the rise of New Zealand now with the rise of Tonga. And I think it'd be great to honour perhaps some of the pioneers of those nations that have sort of come across and, you know, have done well in the game and has inspired young kids in their respective countries to do well. And I think that's probably maybe a reason why some of the Pacific nations, are doing so well in rugby league at the moment, is because of some of the pioneering players that have gone before them. I think there was another announcement that they're also going to put a bit more emphasis in the Hall of Fame, and that they'll be inducting more Hall of Fame members. So that's actually really good to see, because I think the immortals should be the elite of the elite, but I think we should also have the Hall of Fame, which acknowledges the elite of every generation. So, but look, my pick is Dally M, and maybe, I don't know, who else would be a candidate from an international type flavor. I don't know, Ellery Hanley, I don't know, did he have a big impact? Or somebody out there that was that's not actually from Australia. Noah Ndrukwu, maybe? Do you see him as an immortal? I'm not sure. So, but look, Dally Messenger for me for sure. How about you there, Dr. T?
Yeah, look, I'd agree. Dally Messenger for sure, if we are going to open it up to that kind of level of... Look, before that was kind of an option, people have been talking about Mal Meninga. Unfortunately, I still think he is way behind even players like Norm Proven, who are... It's a travesty that, there's a trophy named after him, it's kind of silly that Norm Proven isn't considered in the same breath. But if you look at the level of success he had, I think when you compare the eras, and when you compare the kind of the level of success he had as captain and coach, it kind of dwarfs Mal Meninga as well. So, when you look at it that way, you kind of think, well, how did others get a start before even he did? I don't know. So I think if we're going for players whose time is definitely, they definitely need to be acknowledged, I'd have to put Norm Proven up there. If you're looking at righting some wrongs from the past and going back all the way to the beginning, then I think there isn't merit to giving Dally M, Dally Messenger, and possibly Dave Brown as well. I mean, out of all the players in that early kind of pre-World War II era that made the biggest impact, obviously Dally Messenger did, as the ultimate kind of the first pioneer that made the switch across from rugby union. But Dave Brown, look, a lot of his try scoring records, stood almost until very recently. He was so prolific a try scorer and a point scorer that the fact that some of his records weren't broken until very recently. Look, if you're looking for something that stands the test of time and that is the ultimate definition of an immortal, you can't go past Dave Brown either. So I would put my head in the ring for both Dave Brown and Dally Messenger on that basis. Once we've got them out of the way, then we can start looking at some of the great, the leaders of the 60s, like Norm Proven. And then we can start looking in a more modern sense for some of the players that have achieved, as you said, who have been the elite of the elite. But as I said, I don't think that Mal Meninga is next in line. I don't even think Darren Lockyer is next in line. Mm-hmm. I can see why there was a lot of consternation about Andrew Johns being given that mantle, probably ahead of time. But that decision was made already. We can't really change that. But we can look at righting the wrongs of the past and going back to the very beginning. So that's my view, Dally M and Dave Brown.
And look, I also saw this where I believe that they've not just opened it up to former players, but also administrators and officials as well, to be also honoured in this way. And then you've got to think about Victor Trumper, James Joseph Gilton, and Henry Hoyle, I think it was, that actually founded Rugby League in Australia.
Yeah.
Without their contribution, you know, maybe would be playing gridiron or something. Do you know what I mean? Like,
so
I mean that's very important figures that I'm sure there's a Hall of Fame out there that's got their names in it, but we do need to honor those people that founded this sport and sort of funded it, supported it, risked their livelihoods and their reputations to get this off the ground, and sometimes it's unfortunate that they probably didn't see the fruit of their sacrifice in their lifetime, but at least as a rugby league community we can honor them, and I think that would be fantastic, and let's hope that this Hall of Fame ceremony, this immortal ceremony, let's hope it gets televised and done with all the respect that it deserves.
Well done. Tackle number 6. NRL round 3 previews and tips. So here we go with the tips. Look, last week you got 4 out of 8. I unfortunately got 2 out of 8. So I'm on a total of 6 out of a possible 16. That's terrible. And you're in a total of 10. Heading into round 3.
But we're both doing pretty poorly.
Pretty poorly, but I don't think many people will be doing very well this time of year with all the shocks that we've had. So let's launch into our tips for round 3. So Storm versus Cowboys. I think the Cowboys will win this one.
I'm going to tip the Storm to bounce back from their for Billy Slater's 301th game.
Fair enough. Bulldogs versus Panthers. I'll tell you who won't be bouncing back, the Bulldogs. The Panthers will win this one.
The Panthers for Monday. They seem unbeatable at the moment.
Speaking of unbeatable, Tigers versus Broncos. I'm tipping them to go 3-3 from the top 3 from last year. Tigers to win.
I am absolutely nervous about this game. I'm thinking, when are the wheels going to fall off? But I'm still tipping the Tigers. There we go.
Of course you are. Raiders versus Warriors. The Warriors will go 3-3.
Yeah. Ricky's men need to get their season going. They haven't won a game yet. They're such a good squad. I'm tipping the Raiders to show their mettle finally.
Rabbitohs versus Seagulls. Well, I think Manly have finally clicked into gear, so I'm tipping them.
Seagulls for mine on this one as well.
Eels versus Sharks in the Johnny Manor Cup, and I think the Eels will bounce back.
Both these teams haven't won yet, and I think the Eels are going to be... I'm going to tip the Sharks, only because they've decided to pull the trigger and have Dugan as fullback, whereas the Eels don't have Haynes fullback yet. So.
Well, there you go. Titans versus Dragons. Dragons to go 3-3.
Dragons for mine on this one. And this game is, I think, being played in Toowoomba, right?
Quite possibly. And finally, the grudge match of the season. Roosters versus Knights. Hell of a story here. I think the Roosters will win this one. Tedesco to be man of the match.
Yeah. Do I want to go for Tedesco or do I want to go for Pierce? Tedesco for mine. So there we go. Roosters for mine as well.
All right, there we have it. So those are our tips for round 3. And ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of our podcast. Thank you very much, Tish, for your wonderful insights into how to get the Eels back off the canvas
Okay.
Hopefully, can you put a call out to Benji, because they desperately need someone with a bit of perspective and a bit of experience in how to do that. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, on our website, rorepublic.com. Send us an email, rorepublic@gmail.com, if you've got any hints and tips on how we could improve this podcast and any ideas on what you want us to talk about next time around. And don't forget to subscribe and download all of our episodes on iTunes. Tish, over to you.
Well, Dr. T, thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for this episode. I'd like to thank everybody else for listening out there. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for this edition of the Rugby League Republic. We're your hosts, Tish and Dr. T. Join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.